You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC.
You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks. I'm your host, Toby Ives, from the New Mexico State Film Office. Last week, I also got to do a show in lieu of Dirk, who was out on the road. And if you missed it, you can go to santafe.com, and there's the podcasts from all the previous shows. So tune in, or maybe you'd like to listen to this one again. It's going to be a great show. We have Linda McDill here. Linda is currently the president of the New Mexico Women in Film. And later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Rod Sanchez, who is, I don't know, I call him my post-production guru. So let me introduce Linda. Linda, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Sure.
Now, you know, I didn't realize what a artistic background you had. I've known you on and off prior to the New Mexico Women in Film. Mm-hmm. And so you were a professional pianist in college even, right?
Yes, I think I started playing when I was real young and then started entertaining professionally when I was in college.
Oh, that's great.
And played all over the world and then landed in Houston for a while.
Are you originally from Houston or from Texas?
I'm originally from Texas, yeah, from a little town on the Louisiana border called Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Orange, Texas. Nice. In the bio country.
Nice. And so how did you go from being a musician to getting mm-hmm. into, being the president of Women in Film? I mean, I know that's kind of a large spectrum, but, you know.
It's been a long, strange road, but it's been a lot of fun. After being a professional musician for many years and, you know, working all over the place, I had managers and agents and yada, yada, and through the years, and learned a lot from them as to what to do and what not to do. After I was in Houston for a few years, I decided to open my own entertainment agency with a partner. And we booked and represented bands and specialty entertainment for social and corporate events.
I see.
And so that got me on the business side of music, which I had been on a little bit, but as, you know, just taking care of my own business and thought maybe I could help other musicians. And it turned out kind of well.
Good. That's good.
And so through that, it got me on the business side and interested in that. And Stu Goswick and I moved to Santa Fe 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we didn't know that film stuff was going on.
It was a good timing.
It was. So we thought that we would kind of repurpose our entertainment business careers into the film business.
Which makes perfect sense to transition
yeah,
from that.
So
especially
went,
you're dealing with concerts and you know, now you're getting
right.
into physical
and
production.
I had, in addition to my booking agency that I had in Houston, I opened a little side business to it called Jazz Arts Management, and I represented jazz recording artists and did a lot of work for them, you know, doing concerts and production work and PR mm-hmm. and all that. And I, through that, learned a lot about the business side. Mm-hmm. And so when I got here, started taking classes in entertainment law, and went to L.A. and took classes in contracts and negotiations for film licensing, licensing music for film.
Right,
which
right.
is a little different than licensing for music, mm-hmm. you know, to do a production.
In a niche
or a CD.
Here.
But, yeah, I didn't see that there was anyone here that mm-hmm. could do that or was interested in doing it.
Right.
So I spent 3 or 4 years working for free and doing, you know, re-educating myself.
Wow.
So...
Now, in the meantime, I know that I think Stu started working on Crew, right? So he was also going in the film direction in a
yes.
different way.
Yeah, he wanted to get out of the booking business altogether mm-hmm. and do some hands-on things. So he took the FTTP class. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, the film technician training
right.
class, probably at the Santa Fe Community College. Yeah.
Yeah, and then got in the union and also was hired by the community college to manage their grip equipment.
Right, right.
And then we had a radio program that kind of fell in our lap about the film industry in New Mexico, and that's been fun. We've been doing that for a few years and have gotten to meet a lot of people through that.
And I imagine that's how you started becoming familiar or involved with the Women in Film then?
Actually, I'm a charter member of Women in Film.
And you already were in Texas?
No, here in New Mexico when they were putting it together about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that when they put that together.
They did. And I saw
I don't think I met you then, though.
No, I saw it in the paper. Yeah. And I thought, well, this is the direction I'm going. I want to go. Let me see if I can get in. And you had to show all this, you know, have people sign for you to get in at that time and all this. And I thought, well, I'll never get in. But I just told them the truth. This is the direction I'm studying for, and this is my background. And they let me in.
Yeah, well, so I appreciate the support, and just having the vision is, I mean, any organization would appreciate that, the vision.
Yeah,
it's a great
group.
And I remember I met, I think it was Janet Davidson.
Yeah, she was the ringleader of getting this going here in the state.
And, you know, it's been interesting to watch it evolve kind of in a peripheral, you know, viewpoint because, you know, Trish Lopez, Eileen Street, and Janet, and you know, and Tammy Decker's involved. Yeah. It's nice to see that happening. I'm curious, you know, let's actually talk, if you don't mind, a minute about the organization itself. What do you feel is the need to have an organization for this demographic, for women? Why women in film?
Why not? That's my answer. Why not?
Right.
There are a lot of women working in film. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of women who want to work in film and, like me, have been successful in other peripheral businesses that want to repurpose their careers. And it's a great organization. We also have many men members and men who come to the meetings and our events. So it's not just a strictly women's only thing. But I think that it's important that women get together and share some of their ups and downs and some of the things that they need and want out of their career. And we're able to help them either find education or support them in some way of that, or help them with things that they deal with in their film career.
Now you have to realize I'm being a little bit of a devil's advocate here.
That's all right. That's all right.
And I, you know, my personal opinion, I think it's great that men are involved because I think it's not, you know, it's not about an entitlement group, which sometimes when you get a sub-demographic, if that's the correct term, you know, you might get that kind of feel from it. But what I hear you saying, what I've seen over the years happen is that I think sometimes women may not think of those career options. And I think now you see women with those career options doing those things.
Right.
Because I still think when I go on set, you know, at least in the physical production, when you're on physical, the physical aspect of production, it's still the majority of men. And I think that probably is true throughout the industry.
It's pretty much true throughout the world in a lot of cases. But I think that's changing. And it's definitely changing in film and TV, that there are more women producers and directors that are coming up through the ranks, and we just need to be supportive of each other.
Versus just the assistants or the, you know, if you're talking studio world, you do see a lot more producers in those upper ranks, not just, you know, the assistant accountant or producer assistant.
We have a lot of great members that are out there doing great things, you know, that are line producers and DPs and executive producers and all sorts of things, casting agents. We just
You know, and I feel like too recently I've seen just as many location managers that are women, for instance, as men. You know,
absolutely.
That's a very interesting position because you're doing a lot of public relations, which is a little different than, you know.
That's true.
If you can,
Puck Stare is one who's out there
Puck's
doing
hilarious.
Good stuff.
Puck's,
I love
Puck's
her.
Great.
Yeah.
No, I just talked with Mindy Jones yesterday, another one, and ran into Lisa Van Allen, who's been doing some scouts here and there as a city film liaison. And I think Lisa's been involved as well in Women in Film.
She has.
Yeah,
she has.
You have had great to see a lot of the careers develop, especially in New Mexico. And so I think that's great. Now, when did this chapter, or was it always this way, allow men? I mean, it allows anyone, right?
Right. I'm not sure when they started.
Because I felt like that
allowing
happened somewhere
men,
in
may
in
have
between.
Been, well, the organization in New Mexico is probably 8 years, 7 or 8 years mm-hmm. old. And there are 22 chapters around the world. We're the New Mexico chapter. So they're all over the world. And I guess in the last 5 years is when I've noticed that men were more, you know, more prominent and not so much in running the organization at all, but in just showing up and being, we have a lot of loyal men members who come to everything and are great.
Yeah, and I think it also shows that it's a great networking organization.
Yes.
I mean, so it's not, you know, it's not just about careers and women in these careers. I mean, it's a networking organization for New Mexico,
yes.
putting on educational and community service events.
Yes.
So it is very all-inclusive. And I think that's maybe a misnomer about when you have an organization saying women in film that, you know, you may think it's exclusive, and it's really not. Very inclusive.
That's right. That's right. We have a lot of programs that are inclusive of a number of other organizations and other people. And in fact, at our November meeting, we're going to show, we do a PSA every year and produce one. And that gives a lot of people a chance to kind of flex their muscles of things that they've been learning or working on. And we pick a charity or an organization that needs some visibility and do a PSA, and we're getting ready to do one.
I'm going to say this on radio, but I think that one I can actually attend.
Fabulous.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Linda McDill and the organization New Mexico Women in Film. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC. I'm Toby Ives, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to New Mexico Filmworks. This is Toby Ives from the New Mexico State Film Office, and you're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC. Our guest today is Linda McDill. Linda, again, thanks for being here.
Sure.
We were just talking about some of the, you know, additional types of events and outreach that Women in Film, New Mexico Women in Film, does. And I know part of your mission is not just to recognize the achievement of women in the film and in television industry, but mentoring, networking, education, and community service.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about the upcoming meeting where there is a PSA that's going to be shown. Am I understanding that right? Tell me a little
more
about
that. Right, we're going to show the PSA that was done during 2012, and then we'll start taking suggestions for the one that we'll do in 2013 and start organizing that production team and getting that organized so we can do another one this year.
And most of these seems like it's like talked about the homeless, rape crisis, that type of thing. Can you tell us what this one is?
Yes, the one this year that we're going to show mm-hmm. on November 11th is about Susan G. Komen, Race for the Cure.
Mm. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
and then
beautiful.
And then that's
PSA.
When you get the next ideas. And then it sounds like it's a volunteer, collaborative effort.
It is.
People come together.
It is. And we usually have a producer and director, you know, and maybe director of photography or something that are very experienced, and then bring in other ladies and men who need some experience or some mentoring, that may want to learn more about grip or about line producing or, you know, whatever. And it's a great group collaborative experience for everyone.
What about the fundraising aspect of this? I mean, is there a fundraising aspect to it? I mean, do you need...
Of the PSA?
Yeah.
We have it budget for it every year.
Okay.
But we just did a fundraiser a couple of Sundays ago at La Posada.
I know, I missed it.
It
was
so much fun. Actually, La Posada honored New Mexico Women in Film. They threw the party.
They
did everything. And then the fee to get in went directly to New Mexico Women in Film.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it was a great fundraiser, and we appreciated everybody who came out for that and who donated door prizes for it, too. We had a great
party. And, you know, in addition to that, I know you do panels
panel
and
discussions.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, you know, our office, you know, we like to do panels and workshops. We don't necessarily have the staff resources to do that, so it's always great to see other entities doing that.
Yeah, we feel like we get a good overview from a number of people, you know, and panelists don't always agree with each other on things, which is great too. So we have so we have great lively discussions, and did one recently that I thought was tremendous on children's programming.
Oh, right.
And had just some top-notch women who live in New Mexico that do this, you know, on a national scale, but they live here, and it was just excellent.
Now, if you want to be involved in the monthly newsletter, do you have to be a member?
You know, I'm not sure. I think that you can sign up
for
the news.
Sorry.
That's all right. I've just been president for a few, you know, like 6 weeks, so I'm still learning the ropes. But I think that you can sign up for it. Our website is nmwif.com, which is New Mexico Women in Film.com. And there's on the right side, you can click on the newsletter and see if you indeed can get it without joining. But I would imagine that you can see it on there on our website without being a member.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's also a writers group. Is that a kind of a subcommittee, if you will, of the membership? Or
that writers group has been kind of asleep for the past year, I think. And we
have so much going on. I can see
that. Oh, my gosh, yes. But there are people who are very interested in reviving it. And that's one of my goals, to start that in January again. So that will be in the news coming up soon, because we're in the process of reviving that and re-energizing it in a different way. And so it'll be very valuable to members and non-members who want to be part of a screenwriting group that meets regularly.
And I should mention that we do on nmfilm.com post bulletin boards of a lot of your events as
well.
They
do. Thanks to Dirk. He keeps his eye on it and will write me and say, I just put this on the bulletin board for you.
He'll stick it on Facebook. Our Facebook's Film New Mexico. So you can, you know, get some of this information through those avenues as well. Let's talk a minute about SAGE Awards. Now, I think you just had your fifth award given out.
That's right. We awarded Anna Gallegosi Reinhart, who is the director of Warehouse 21, and we announced her and gave her the SAGE Award at our event earlier this month.
Now, let's talk about what exactly the SAGE Award is. I understand it's basically recognizing someone, a woman that's very active in supporting the film industry.
Exactly. And we felt that
in New Mexico, I'm assuming?
In New Mexico. Yeah. And we felt that she was a great person for us to choose, because she has done so much for the young people and the young women in all aspects of art, film, TV, art, everything. She just, if you've ever been to Warehouse 21, you know, it's just a big mishmash of everything.
Yeah.
And she does a beautiful job with that. And we were happy to give her our SAGE Award this year. We've had Shirley MacLaine in the past and Ally McGraw. Mm-hmm.
And I know my former director, Lisa Strout.
That's right.
And our current City of Albuquerque film liaison, Ann Lerner.
That's right.
Yeah. So you know, really, really great to recognize a lot of people that I think they just put their head down and work, and then they kind of pop up and they go, oh, people notice that we're doing stuff.
I know. At the party when we were getting ready to give Anna her award, she was so touched. Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't believe, she said, that y'all even thought of me. Oh. And that was nice that she was so humble about it. But she's a powerhouse.
That's fantastic. And I think a lot of these examples that we're talking about now, again, go back to showing that it's not about entitlement. It's not about excluding. It's really, really about including and thinking about taking the time to thinking about the industry and who's in the industry in a different way. So I think that's great about the organization.
Yeah.
Sponsors. So you do rely on sponsors, again. So you do have the fundraising events like La Posada. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I imagine you can read a little bit more about that on your website
again. On the website,
which is
nmwif.com.
Now, if people have questions, how do they, can they contact you directly? Is there somewhere on the website?
Yes, it's nmwifinfo@gmail.com, but you can get that through the website and I'll get it. So if you have any questions about the organization or our events or our monthly meetings, which are tailor-made to be educational and uplifting, to everyone. You can go there and check that out.
And I imagine, too, if someone's considering membership or wanting to see how involved they'd like to be, they can attend one of the meetings.
Yes. That's yes. Fantastic. Meetings are. In fact, our next meeting on November 11th in Albuquerque is open to the public and are open. There's no fee to come. We're going to talk about what everyone would like to see in the industry in 2013, next year. So it's a planning meeting for next year.
And where would they find out where that meeting's taking place?
At the website, again. Okay. And also on our Facebook page.
Okay. And what's your Facebook page? Is it just NM?
New Mexico Women, NM Women in Film.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fantastic. Well, Linda, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me, Toby.
And I think we just put up another bulletin about Joe Edna. Doing some casting.
Oh, great event information. That she's doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in that, go to either nmwif.com or nmfilm.com and look on our bulletin board. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC, and we'll be right back. And you feel yourself suffer. Welcome back. You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC. I'm your host, Toby Ives, with the New Mexico State Film Office. We just were talking with Linda McDill, president of New Mexico Women in Film. Now our next guest is Dr. Rod Sanchez. Rod, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Rod, I know you've been working with us being the film office, in figuring out what the status of emerging media is in New Mexico.
Right.
And I know you have a lot of background on that. You were the president of CereLink, which I understand is no longer around or...
Yeah, correct.
Okay. What did CereLink do? What was that?
Yeah, so we developed a new way of doing what they call remote rendering for computer animation. And it was animation to be specifically used in motion picture production. So in essence, we had a bank of computers here in New Mexico, and animators in Los Angeles could use these computers over this remote link called the National Lambda Rail. And so animators in Los Angeles could use these many hundreds or thousands of computers here in New Mexico and do it in sort of a real-time way. And the reason why computers are more efficient here in New Mexico versus a place like Los Angeles or San Francisco is because New Mexico's power costs and availability are so much more efficient.
And you've segued into being on the board of directors for the Lambda Rail, is that correct?
No, not the Lambda Rail. I'm on the board of directors for the Lanel Foundation.
I'm sorry, I can't read my writing. I apologize. Yeah. So what's the connection there? Is there a connection?
No, there's no connection. The National Lambda Rail is a consortium of universities across the country that acquired this fiber optic backbone for communicating amongst these universities for research and development purposes. Here in New Mexico, the university primarily involved in National Lambda Rail is the University of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they chose to use that fiber optic capacity to spark economic development in New Mexico, a case being CereLink's use of the National Lambda Rail to draw digital animation to New Mexico.
And would the labs be involved in that, or that's just with the universities primarily?
The labs are involved, and okay. They are members and do have access to National Lambda Rail.
See, I knew there was a connection.
Yeah.
I knew it.
And that's actually an interesting sort of thing, you know, because the labs are doing so much more in things like using animation for things like serious gaming. And so when we think of gaming, we typically think of entertainment-style gaming. But there's this whole emerging topic of serious gaming that's coming up. And the labs are using, you know, animation and using this fiber optic backbone to develop these games to train, first responders, for example, in metropolitan areas as to how to respond most efficiently to a disaster of some kind.
So let's back up a little here, because I'm not a very technical person, I'll just say. So let's just talk about some terms. So first of all, the Lambda Rail has to do with rendering, right? It's speeding up the rendering of a project that's put together.
The Lambda Rail is basically a high capacity, high bandwidth, super fast fiber optic cable.
So rendering would be one option to use that. That's one of many options.
Yeah. So okay. So that's
I'm thinking
the,
film world
that's
here.
That's the transport mechanism for rendering. So an animator, say in Los Angeles, produces a frame, sends it via Lambda Rail to New Mexico, gets it rendered, or a series of frames get rendered into motion, and then sent back to the animator in, I think it's 17 milliseconds.
See, and that's incredible, because I would imagine once that is really tapped into here, that's going to really help our post-production with our physical production, right?
Absolutely. Okay. And the communication link between, you know, places like LA or San Francisco and New Mexico is extremely important, because you can have people in both places communicating in virtual real time with these large amounts of data. And so, as you know, making an animated motion picture these days is just very, very data intensive.
Right.
And so a mechanism like National Lambda Rail really facilitates that interactivity.
So you also mentioned the term serious gaming. And I guess how I interpret that from, you know, you did a great presentation, for instance, at our education summit back on the 7th of September at the Hispanic Cultural Center. So I was reviewing that, and serious gaming to me means training more than anything, or educational, versus, say, video games where all the guys get their Xbox and meet on some, I don't know, Halo thing. Is that, I think that's a video game.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm very into it, right? But is that the difference?
Yeah, exactly. And serious gaming is an educational tool. Primarily an educational tool, and it can be applied to everything from national defense to, you know, teaching high school kids math concepts. And so it's being just applied to all of these different, you know, sort of economic sectors, and it's really had a profound effect. I mean, one really cool example is, you know, so medical students are getting trained using serious gaming, and essentially it puts you in a virtual environment with different variables. A patient comes in with these symptoms or characteristics, and the medical student uses serious gaming to kind of hone their diagnostic techniques.
And I would imagine that's kind of, it's adding to the book work and the lecture work, not replacing their interaction with people. I mean that's so that they're, when they are finally faced with the real deal, they have more of that experience. It's kind of, it's almost to me like an additional step before you are.
Yeah, it's almost
somewhere.
Adding a practicum to the concepts they're learning in a lecture or in a book,
right.
And applying that practicum in sort of an academic setting before they enter sort of the real world setting.
Right, and I think it's an obvious that model, it could be applied to so many different aspects, you know, education. You know, like you said, some of the companies and medical research and health fields. So that's
exactly. I mean, it enables experimentation, virtual experimentation, and everything from the development of the next semiconductor or microchip to, you know, like I said, training healthcare professionals, or even at, you know, in the case of the labs, training, you know, Department of Defense, individuals on things like border security or things like that.
Now, it's interesting. We had Talia Kosh from the New Mexico Lawyers for the Arts, who was also at our education summit. She was on the radio show last week. And I was talking about, you know, my two-year-old son as a digital native, as the term is. And I can imagine as the next 10 years, I mean, I'm going to be very involved in this because that's part of how he's going to be educated. I mean, he literally the other day changed the language on my speaker, you know, when you're searching for something on your phone, to Afrikaan. I still can't figure out how to turn it back. I might have to give you my phone, Rod, so you can help me there. But so this is now we're talking about emerging media. So that's kind of where serious gaming falls under this umbrella term, as I call it, emerging media. And one of the things is we're talking about how these kind of cross different industries. And I know you'd mentioned before, not in the show, but in your presentation about top grossing films being heavily saturated with CGI. And so what's happening between the industries? How is all this crossing? Are we seeing things developed in the movies being developed, used in the healthcare field and vice versa? Are we seeing a lot of that happening, or
yeah,
will we see it?
You really are seeing a lot of that, in that it goes back to your comment around, digital natives. And so our kind of world and our landscape is changing, in that we're just, surrounded with all of these digital images. And so I tend to call it an entertainment-oriented society, is what we're sort of becoming.
I think that's fair.
And and so we're trying to apply the sort of the lessons of Hollywood to things like teaching math, or teaching students, medical students, healthcare techniques, or even things like using mobile app devices to, sort of supplement an educational curricula. So all of these things have digital components to them. And I think you're right in that they all fall under this umbrella that we're calling emerging media. And the reason I think most people call it emerging media is because it's so dynamic in nature. It's constantly changing, and we haven't quite defined it yet. And I'm not sure it will be defined soon, because of it's evolving very quickly.
It'll be interesting to see when companies develop, and of course our interest is seeing, more entertainment related businesses here in New Mexico as the film division, and having a full movie produced here from beginning to end. And we're seeing, kind of more and more happening. And since I've been in the film office for 8 years, you definitely see the trend that's possible. Compared to, we were hoping to get at least the physical production 8 years ago, and now we're looking at all these different businesses. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about how do businesses keep these boundaries of the industry, or should they? Or should they just be entertainment? Should they have a base of this type of technology and be in all different fields? I mean, what are we trying to recruit here? Right now, we're talking with Rod Sanchez. He is I call it our emerging media guru. How's that for a title? And we're at Talk 1260 KTRC. I'm your host, Toby Ives, and we'll be back momentarily.
Felines and Friends provides second chance rescue and placement for furry friends. For more info, go to SantaFe.com, keyword felines and friends.
You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC. If you'd like to listen to this broadcast again or hear archived podcasts, please go to SantaFe.com, and you can scroll down to the bottom of that homepage and you will find those links to all the broadcasts. Well, I guess they're now podcasts. Just go to SantaFe.com. We are talking with Rod Sanchez, and I guess I'm trying to understand a little bit about emerging media. Rod, you're very knowledgeable on this, and one of the things we began to talk about prior to the break was businesses. How do businesses really wrap their head around this? Because there's so many applications to different industries. So if you're an entertainment industry that's involved in emerging media, it seems to me that that's the industry that's leading the way for some of the other industries, because you can be creative and try things out on projects and see what works and see what the innovative side of it. Am I thinking about that right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the entertainment industry just has such a profound influence on sort of unrelated industries, like we were saying, healthcare and education. And again, how do we take the fundamental characteristics of what makes a Hollywood movie successful and apply those same storytelling or digital animation elements to make, learning math entertaining and interesting,
right.
Or applying digital media to help educate patients about their own healthcare situation, to improve sort of the healthcare delivery system. I think there's so many applications of these digital components that were sort of cultivated by the entertainment industry that can be applied to all of these other sort of other industries to make them more effective and more interesting.
So in recruiting these type of companies to New Mexico, or encouraging companies that are maybe somewhat involved and are evolving themselves into this industry, it seems like the focus should be on entertainment. I mean, I know I'm going to say that because I'm in the film office, and I know that's where we relate to that. What do you think about that in regards to the recruitment efforts?
Yeah, it all starts in entertainment. And so the same animator, for example, that might work on a feature film could apply those same set of skills to developing a mobile app for healthcare, or developing some digital animation that helps a high school teacher supplement their curricula to students. And so I think they're becoming more interrelated and not segregated at all. And the skill set that an animator uses in many of the jobs being done in entertainment can be applied to other sectors.
And it's true. I mean, even my background is more fine arts and anthropology, but I always found it interesting that the teachers need to teach that subject rather than use it as a medium. So that's kind of how I relate to this, because it's a medium
right.
for teaching. And I think of art in general as a medium for teaching and storytelling. And like, I would love to see painting or music used for kids to learn history. And so I can see at least the digitally, that's probably more comprehensible in to create these learning, these applications. And I mean, my son is hugely loving leapfrogs and all those, which now he got a leapfrog little computer for his birthday.
Yeah.
So he stops using mine, and you can hook it in and get an email and, attach it to my computer, which I haven't even gotten to yet, but he's all gung ho. He's not even two, so it's really interesting to see how these applications are going to move forward, because it's entertainment, like you said, and then education.
Right. And it's this whole concept of applied learning, or as, some people call it, contextual learning. And, it's trying to find a way to pair academic concepts with real world situations. One quick example, I ran across a gal that's a visiting professor from Stanford who's now at Highlands University. And she's taking these, high-resolution digital scans of the pyramids of Giza in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And using those, we could teach students around, what the pyramids look like. But then you can apply them to, like, a math class and say, mathematical concepts did the ancient Egyptians use to construct these pyramids? And again, applying an equation that's somewhat sort of conceptual in nature, mm-hmm. and applying it to a real world situation, I think if students can make that connection, mm-hmm. it just clicks.
It does.
And so, and all of it made possible through digital media and an entertainment element to it as well.
So why do you think, and I'm digressing a little, why do you think the top grossing films are mostly animations or animated related or digitally created? I mean, what's your personal opinion on that?
Yeah, I think we've just, the audiences are just, expecting something fantastical.
So it's looking for something new?
Yeah, it's just continually pushing the envelope with regard to stunts and special effects and those things that, just aren't really feasible in, real world situations. So they create these CGI situations to do these things.
So in regards to the demographics, see, to me, when I'm looking through the movies, what's out there, there's not a lot of films that are often for younger audiences. And so I guess I would also think that's a huge market and that a lot of the animated and the digital is it often towards those young demographics?
Yeah, I think they start, targeting a younger demographic. But, again, these storytellers are just geniuses at getting and captivating the attention of younger people, mm-hmm. but also of adults who right. take the child to the theater to watch the movie. And so being able to, to capture the attention of both those demographics, I think, is extremely important and something they've done extraordinarily well.
Well, before we wrap up here, Rod, I have one more question for you. You have a very diverse and interesting background in neuroscience and MBA. What's next for you?
Well, I'm really trying to take, these concepts that, these fundamental concepts that make Hollywood films successful and apply them to other sectors. And it really comes back to the way I think people are learning today. In our digital society, I think having a digital component is a very powerful educational tool. And how we could take the concepts of Hollywood and make it entertaining while at the same time educational, that's kind of my goal.
Thank you so much, Rod. We really appreciate you being here. It was very informative. And if you'd like to see Rod's presentation that he made at the Education Summit in September, go to nmfilm.com. You can click on Emerging Media, the main tab at the bottom of the page, and you'll be able to go through that PowerPoint. You're listening to KTRC 1260, Talk 1260. This is Toby Ives, and this is New Mexico Filmworks. And you can go to santafe.com for archived podcasts.